This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Kevin Randall, author of The UFOs and the Deep State. It's a fantastic book, and it really puts into perspective everything that's been going on here. So we're going to come back with Kevin. We'll chat more about the book. We'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Kevin Randall with us, George Norrie back with you. Kevin, you know, when this report comes out, which obviously we know most of it already, leaked by the New York Times and everything else, people are going to just say, enough is enough. Quit lying to us.
I would think so. And we can point to any number of reports that have been issued by the government about UFOs that have been totally bogus. When Project Sign ended in 1949, the Air Force came out with a final report, said, well, here's our study of UFOs. We're done investigating it. There's nothing to it, and let's move on. But the investigation didn't end. All they did was change the name of it and continue going, change it to Project Grudge. Same thing with Grudge. When Grudge ended, they issued a big, long report and said, well, there's nothing to it, but they continued on with Project Blue Book. When Blue Book ended in 1969, they said, we don't study UFOs anymore. We discovered there was something called Moondust. And Moondust continued on until 1985 when the name was compromised and they changed the name, but they continued to investigate. And now we've learned about the ATIP program where they would continue to investigate UFOs and are continuing to do it today. So they've taken it seriously enough to continue the investigations for literally decades and lying to the public about exactly what they're doing.
Have you or anybody you know been campaigned against to discredit you?
I haven't been, and I've always wondered about that. I mean, I've had top secret security clearances from the very beginning. It coincidentally, when I was first commissioned and going to move into the intelligence work for my top secret clearance, the investigating officer happened to live across the street from my father. And so I know what was in the file, and I'd published four articles that were kind of mean about the Air Force and what they had been doing and how their investigation was less than great, and those articles were in the file, but I still got my top secret clearance. So nobody, it hasn't really interfered with my progression in the military. But I do know that some people have had some trouble with what they've seen and what they've said. Their careers have been derailed. Pilots especially reporting UFOs, they begin to talk about them having psychological problems and that sort of thing. So there has been some manipulation and pressure put on various people about what they've seen and what they've done.
Let's go to the phones. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, how you been?
Hi, George. Thank you. Thank you so much, and happy birthday.
Thank you, sir, to both of us.
And happy birthday to your dear mother.
And Kevin. It's Kevin's birthday, too.
Oh, is it Kevin? Happy birthday, Kevin Randall.
Thank
Fantastic.
You.
My question, since you brought it up, Kevin, at the beginning of the interview about chemical interrogation and the use of hypnosis in interrogation and debriefings, etc., and that begs the question for me, which is, what would that involve? If you were in the military, as an example, okay, this is a comment and then the question. If you were in the military, you saw a UFO, and say you had missing time, okay, and you were convinced that that missing time was a result of the encounter. But it begs the question for me, is that missing time maybe a result of chemicals, chemical interrogation, or perhaps electronic manipulation and the debriefing? You see where I'm going on this. I mean, there's been a lot of reports about, you know, military being debriefed with, well, you mentioned it, Terry Lovelace, with the encounters at Devil's Den, you know, that there was possible chemical interrogation. So walk us through that. What would use? What would they inject into you?
I do not know what chemicals they would use specifically, what kind of truth serums they would use, or how the chemical aggressions work, and whether they would be using psychedelics as well. But we know, based on what Terry Lovelace has said, and I have no reason to doubt him, and as I say, he kind of inspired the the book UFOs in the Deep State, and I actually talk about his case in the book. I've talked to him a number of times about that. But then we get to Jim Peniston and John Burroughs from Rendlesham Forest, and they too underwent chemical regression. Charles Hall told me that everybody involved in the sightings on those nights in December of 1980 were involved in some kind of chemical and hypnotic regression, with the exception of him. I wonder if they did fool him into thinking he had not been subjected to that kind of an interrogation, because he just denies that anything like that happened to him. But he says that his men were, in fact, subjected to that sort of thing. I think Loveless talked about it being both chemical and hypnotic, and I'm not sure that Burroughs talked about it being both chemical and hypnotic, but there's been an awful lot of that stuff going on. And the question then becomes, are they implanting memories to the witnesses to kind of divert our attention from what may be the reality of the situation into something that moves us into a fantasy and just leads us down the wrong path? And that may be one of the purposes for the chemical regressions and the hypnotic regressions, is kind of to disguise what really was going on. Was it some kind of an experiment that the Air Force was performing on Loveless or on Peniston and Burroughs and the other fellows, men and women, both at Rendlesham Forest? So you have to take a look at all of that sort of thing, and we just don't have a good answer for that kind of question. But we can say, well, this stuff is going on. It's a manipulation by the AFOSI, and we wonder if that's part of the deep state manipulation of the UFO information, diverting our attention from a path that we should be following.
Kevin, why do you think, if there's this great deception going on, they're even doing that? What are they concerned about? What are they afraid of?
They want to maintain their power. It's all about power. Power leads to money.
They'll lose control if we realize that indeed there are extraterrestrials and they're coming here?
I think the problem is they understand that the technology that the extraterrestrials have could destroy the power structure. And if we have something that suggests that this interstellar flight is possible and gives us clues about how it worked, it can lead to their losing their power. And I think that's why they maintain it. I think there's two things going on here. It's the deep state wants to maintain their power, and that's part of the reason. And there's a national security implication as well. And that's why the cover-up and the secrecy continues today, because they don't want to admit that they can influence our national security. And I think specifically the Belt Montana sightings from 1967, where Malmstrom Air Force Base lost an entire flight of missiles at one time. Theoretically, it is impossible to shut down a missile flight from outside the base. You can't do it. And yet something did it. And I think that was part of the problem. They didn't want our competitors in the world to realize, yes, it can be done. And then they begin searching for a way to do it because they know it can be done. And I think that plays into the national security implications of it. So when people say to me, well, why does the secrecy persist until today? I now have what I think is a legitimate and logical answer of why it persists today, and it's national security, and it's a retention of power by the deep state.
Back to the phones. Let's go east of the Rockies. John in McLean, Virginia, welcome to the show. Hey, John, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, George, a couple things. One, I didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday.
Or the day before.
Right. Let's look at what Lou Alexandro actually said about these things. They can pull 600 to 700 Gs. All right. Our material structures can't even touch that. And F-16 starts breaking up at 17 Gs.
Exactly.
All right. They go at like 13,000 miles an hour with no sonic boom. They have no method of visible propulsion.
And they can stop on a dime.
Yeah, they can turn on a dime going at hypersonic speeds.
And they're not aerodynamic.
Yeah, with no aerodynamics. And the other thing, George, I want to bring up is although Alexandra hadn't talked about it, this also needs to be in the conversation. All the stories about abduction. We've got stories about abductions in little African villages that don't have the X-Files, that don't have access to the Internet, who don't have access to our pop culture, and they describe the same things that are being described here.
Yep.
How stupid do they think we are?
Now, that's an interesting question. How stupid, Kevin, do they think we are?
Obviously, they think, and this is ending in today's environment, but it used to be if the government told us something, we trusted the government.
Oh, and during World War II, if my father doubted anything about the government, he would have gone nuts.
And I think that's why Roswell was so easy to bury at the time. Is it, well, it was just a weather balloon, don't worry about it. And people said, well, yeah, sure, but we don't need to worry about it. I think we've reached a point, and we've seen so many things where the government has told us one thing, and it went in a different direction. And I think a lot of the information that's now coming about the COVID-19, for example, they told us all this stuff about it, and now we're finding out that what they were telling us wasn't true. So I think we're moving into an arena where we don't trust the government, and that's where we're going with some of this stuff. And they're looking at these things that they've said to us for years with a much more careful examination of that information and seeing those discrepancies between what the observations are and what they're telling us.
First-time caller Barbara in the state of Washington. Welcome to the show. Hi, Barb. Go ahead.
How are you?
Okay.
Good. I just have a story about a sighting that my neighbor and I, we saw. It was November 13th, 2011. And it was right 5 miles out of Granite Falls, and it was over her field. We live out in the country.
Okay.
And what it was we saw a craft. They were round, ball-shaped objects. They were dimly lit. They were going at a good clip, and they were spaced evenly apart. And they were traveling from the north, heading south, and as they got over the field, they turned off to the west. And now it was a cloudy night, windy. It was a bright moon, but there were big holes in the clouds that you could see through. So we watched them. She started at 5:30 when she saw them, and then at 8 o'clock she called me and told me what was happening. I went down to the field, looked up. Sure enough, here they were coming and turning off to the west. And I got really afraid, and I just had to go home. I was so afraid. I was shaking. But she stayed there, and she called me at 10 o'clock at night and said, okay, the last one went over.
Wow.
And we tried to find out from other neighbors. We didn't call the police or anything. The next day, I had to let things just settle down. I was so afraid. I'd never
seen
anything.
Could you determine how big they were?
I would say about the size of my little fingers, the nail on my little finger. That's
from a distance, though.
Round.
And how far do you think they were?
I would say they were between the clouds and the stars. I don't think they were way up there. We tried to figure out how high they were up. But it was so shocking, you know, how your brain kind of works. And I didn't get that detail down. There were so many different details happening at that point, you know.
Super. Well, you know, Kevin, if you look at the moon and hold a quarter up, it's about the same size when it's full, right?
Absolutely.
But you don't really realize how big the moon is because you have no concept of distance.
Or you can say the moon can cover up the sun. The moon is much, much smaller than the sun.
Right.
A matter of the distance and the perspective.
Exactly.
And you have to be careful when you're trying to judge distances and sizes of all those sorts of things, especially if it's something up in the sky and you have no sort of
reference. You have no reference.
Points of reference, yes, exactly.
Next up, we have Mark in Baltimore. Welcome to the show. Mark, go ahead, sir.
George, thank you so much for taking my phone call.
Thank you, Mark.
It's a real special night.
It is indeed.
Yes, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Mr. Randall. And great questions by Tom from La Jolla. Great questions always. And I also hope Cornelius, I've been praying for him every night for his well-being. And also, I am so shocked that you announced that Timothy Green Beckley had passed away.
Oh, my God.
He was the one that brought me into the industry. He escorted me to my first UFO conference.
What a great guy he was.
Yeah, in the early 1990s, he introduced me to people like Lear. And some other, Ford, I remember, and Ellen Crystal. And then after that evening's festivities, he escorted me and my fiance out for the evening. He accompanied us and took us on a little tour of the city.
He's going to be
unbelievable. I'll never forget my experience with him because he wrote that magazine.
Let me interject here that I knew him as well. He invited me to a number of conferences, and I wrote for a number of the magazines that he worked for, and he published one of my books.
The UFO Universe magazine.
Yes,
sir. But, sir, it's such an honor to speak to you. I've read every one of your books. And all I wanted to say was what I've always said about Roswell, that the government, Charles Holt, the original, you know, the person there, that they told him to put it out there across the wire, the AP wire. And they said it, that RAAF, Roswell Army Air Force, had captured a flying disc. No further details are revealed. They admitted that they had it. We have so much evidence about how they silenced the ranch owner and gave him that Ford truck. And there is so much evidence. And even to his very dying day, yes, the person that was there, and he said the person that government sent to the field of debris, and he said it was otherworldly. I'll say that to my dying day. And his son said, and he brought some of it home. And yeah, I believe Roswell did happen. It's a very real event because it's the Holy Grail. If it didn't happen, nothing else happened because there's so much evidence in favor of it. You and I remember Mr. Schmidt wrote books about it, and I read all of them, and the evidence is just so convincing to me. No one can convince me it didn't happen.
Well, let me just say one thing here. Actually, they said they had a flying saucer, not a flying disc. And the reason I point that out is because there's been some discussion periodically in the UFO field. Well, they didn't use the term flying saucer in 1947, and I'm thinking the headline in the Roswell newspaper says they captured RAAF captures flying saucer on a ranch in the Roswell region. So I mean,
I've got a copy of that headline somewhere too.
Yes, and my favorite headline, by the way, was in the Cedar Rapids Gazette over the 1952 sightings in Washington D.C. Right out of a science fiction movie, the banner headline on the newspaper said "Saucers Swarm Over Capitol." I just love that headline.
Great stuff, Kevin. Give out your website and where can people get the book "UFOs in the Deep State"?
Well, they can get the book at Amazon.com, of course, and BarnesandNoble.com and the local bookstores. And if you like the book, put in a rating for me because it'll help out a little bit there. The website is www.kevinrandall.blogspot.com. And actually, there's a link to from the book to Amazon to help you out there. And there's there's over 1,000 different postings I put up over the years on UFOs and various aspects of the phenomenon.
Super. Well, we're going to come back in just a moment with final phone calls with Kevin Randall. Those of you on hold, just hang there. We'll do as quickly job as we can to get to you. Don't forget to subscribe to our free YouTube channel by going to coasttocoastam.com and click the YouTube icon in the far right-hand corner, along with TikTok. Take care of that. We're about 170,000 shy of 1 million TikTok followers. How about that? Next hour, join us for my birthday bash and open lines on Coast to Coast, so get ready for that. I'm looking forward to that as well. We're going to come back with final calls with Kevin Randall in a moment, his book UFOs and the Deep State. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Kevin Randall. Our final segment is book UFOs and the Deep State. It's a fantastic book, by the way, Kevin.
Well, thank you.
Just well concise, put together, and well thought out. Let me ask you a question about Roswell. If an object did crash, and it's pretty highly likely it did, why? How could it travel so far in interstellar space and then crash here?
I always think it was somebody on board pushed the wrong button.
Something happened.
No matter how great our technology gets, how good the products we build are, somebody always makes a mistake. There's something that goes wrong. A circuit isn't quite properly affixed. There's some kind of catastrophic failure. I don't know why it crashed. I can just tell you everybody agrees something fell, and all the terrestrial explanations have been eliminated, including the ridiculous Project Mogul explanation. There is absolutely nothing to suggest it was an object of terrestrial manufacture. I don't know why it crashed, but it did.
And then there was another one not too far from there, right?
There are stories of various UFO crashes. I'm kind of a minimalist on that sort of thing. I think we've got way too many crash stories floating around there based on very, very small bits of evidence, single eyewitness testimony and things like that. With Roswell, we've got literally dozens of witnesses to various aspects of the crash or the retrieval and that sort of thing. But when we get to some of these other cases, the numbers are significantly reduced, so we're talking about one or two people. And I kind of look at those a little bit askance simply because of the reduced number of witnesses and the reduced amount of evidence.
Does that include the Cape Girardeau, Missouri alleged crash?
That's one of them, and I have problems with these crashes earlier than Roswell, because I would think that if it happened earlier, the response in Roswell would have been different. They would have known a little bit more, and it seems in Roswell they were kind of operating on what do we do now type thing, as opposed to, well, this has happened before and this is what we did. But Cape Girardeau, I think it's Charlene Mann talked to Len Stringfield about that, mm-hmm. and provided the information, and there was the brother of the sheriff was involved in some fashion. And the thing about that bothers me is, you know, she said, well, we had a picture of the alien creature, but they lost it. And it seems like when we get to a case, a lot of cases, including Roswell, people say, well, I had this, I had that, but it's disappeared.
It's gone, taken, yeah.
You know, somehow it's vanished, and we never get to that point where they say, oh, yeah, I have a piece of it, and here it is.
Let's go back to the phones. Wayne in Tacoma, Washington, to get us going. Hello, Wayne-o.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
And a happy birthday to you two both, and to your mom, George.
Yeah, thank you, Wayne.
And in 3 weeks exactly, it's going to be my diamond birthday.
Perfect.
So I'll be making middle age.
You made it.
And, yeah, right. And I've got a comment and a question, Kevin. I'm thinking about the crash that happened at Roswell, and you mentioned different reasons why it may have happened. I know the most plausible thing that I've read about is that it was the world's most secret top-level base for the atomic bomb, and they used the strongest, most powerful radar in the world.
They didn't have radar at Roswell in July of 1947. They didn't have a radar installation. The radar installations, they had radar in the airplanes, but they did not have a radar installation. It came months later.
Not on the ground.
Oh, wow. That's totally different from what I've been reading about that. That's amazing. Well, that's good information. Thank you.
You would know.
And also, yes, and also the previous crashes you mentioned a little bit about, and I'd like to get your take if you've got any knowledge about the crash that supposedly happened in the mid-1930s, and they took the craft below some of the Capitol buildings in Washington, D.C., because that's where they thought it was the most secure. If you've read about that and have any knowledge about that.
Well, I think it's Cornell Hull's story, and I thought, and I'm having to go back quite a bit in my memory here, but I thought that had something to do with the Cape Girardeau case, which was 1941, so it wasn't the late 1930s, it was 1941, if I'm right on that. And it's one of these things where we have very limited information. We have a couple of leads about it and a couple of people talking about it, but we don't have any good documentation or any kinds of physical evidence. And those sorts of things worry me about, mm-hmm. about those sorts of cases, the limited number. I'd like more in the way of evidence and information and witness testimony.
Go ahead, Wayne. You had a final question?
Yes. On your blog, you talked about a previous crash to Roswell. Was it San Antonio, New Mexico, 1945? What can you tell me about that?
Well, it's pretty well laid out on the blog. That's the one that Jacques Vallée and Paula Harris have been talking about in their book.
In their new book. That's right.
Trinity, The Best Kept Secret. And they lay the whole thing out. But once again, it comes down to two eyewitnesses who were not interviewed until some 50 years after the fact. And the third witness that they bring up in the book wasn't even born in 1945. She lived with Jose Padillo, in that area and heard family stories about it. So that's where that is. But my take on that is I'm a little bit worried about that simply because of the age of the witnesses when they were involved in it being 7 and 9 and not talking about it for some 50 years afterwards. And so I think there's some points of what is called contamination there.
Why don't we have the same kind of cases today as we had 20, 30, 40 years ago?
Carl Flock and I talked about that at length. And we thought that what we were looking at is we had an awful lot of the UFOs showing up at that time frame, but they've all gone home. And so we don't
have... All at the same time.
It may be, it could be that it was just one group.
One group, sure.
Back in 1973, we had a period of sightings, the Pascagoula sighting with Calvin Parker, whose story seems to have, I don't want to say expanded, but I mean there's more corroborative witnesses. I mean, he's done a book or two about that. I've talked to him a couple of times about that. But that was 1973, and I always looked at it as this was like what we would do in a similar circumstance. We show up, we gather all the information we can, we gather samples, and we go off, and the graduate students then begin to analyze the data, and they'll come back when we need more information. It just seemed to me it was the perfect sort of scholarly expedition to Earth type thing. But it just seems to me that they've gone home, and they... In great numbers have gone home, and we're left with one or two events that are interesting, but it's just not, as you say, the same kind of robust sightings we used to get. I mean, no. Roswell, there's literally dozens of people involved in this thing, and we just don't seem to get that anymore.
No. Cheryl in Missouri, take it away, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi, George. Hi, Kevin. Kevin, is your birthday too?
It's his today too, sure.
Yes.
Are you serious?
I'm a year older than George.
Oh, my God.
He's 102 and I'm 101.
There you go. I'm 105. That'd be y'all.
I was going to say, I'm sorry, George, I'm more than 2 years older than you then.
Cool. Bear with me for a moment. I got a few things I want to say, but bear with me for a moment, okay?
Sure.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to George and Kevin. And give your mamas a hug, too.
Ah, thank you, Cheryl.
You're
very sweet of you. Better than Marilyn Monroe would do it.
And fortunately, you don't have to pay royalties on the song anymore.
My honor. Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, but go ahead.
Kevin, thanks for the risk you took to protect our country and everything that you're saying and that kind of deal. I appreciate that a lot.
Thank you.
And I know the LSD testing happened and that kind of deal. Then one guy took it off to the hit the crowd, whatever. That's cool. And last thing I want to say, y'all, and I appreciate you both so much. Okay, Elon Musk launched that cherry red Tesla car with the astronaut doll in the space. And he was playing the David Bowie's Ground Control to Major Tom song. So it's approaching Mars now, too. Just like the other aspects. So I appreciate you both so much. Thank you.
What do you think of Elon Musk? I think the guy's a pioneer, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, we've had an awful lot of people like that. Tesla was a pioneer. Edison was a pioneer. We had just great people helping create the society we have today. And too often we now look down our noses at them. I don't understand that at all.
Let's go to Oklahoma. Dan's with us. Hello, Daniel. Go ahead, sir.
Well, appreciate you taking my call, George.
Sure
and,
thing.
Happy birthday to you and Mr. Randall.
Thank you for both of us.
I mean, I certainly think it could be, you know, like ET, you know, craft, you know, like when the Navy pilots, got a visual and I think something on radar not long ago. But, you know, I want to run by a theory that I was talking to Tommy about and, you know, about it being U.S. technology. And I say that because, you know, you've heard of DARPA, you know, all the research that goes on there kind of behind the scenes. And so my theory is that the possibility is that, you know, and I like how Kevin ties us in with the deep state, because they, you know, they can direct a leak of any kind of piece of information when they get ready, just like they do with leaking Trump's phone call with the Ukrainian leader, but yet they don't leak the content of the call with the President Xi of China. But getting back to the UFO, I think they leak something like that to give our possible adversaries something to think about. And like I was telling Tommy, technology just grows exponentially so much quicker than it ever did even not that many years ago. So I think there's a high possibility, like they might even exaggerate the leak to an extent, even though much of what they're saying is true, but it's U.S. technology, and they're trying to give the world something to think about. You know, like if they want to mess with the U.S., you know, in a big way, like a surprise attack, well, they better think two and three times, because our technology is far greater than the world knows. And I hope that's true, actually. With everything going on in the world today, George, don't you hope that our technology...
Well, you're breaking up right at the end, but yeah, you would hope that we have phenomenal technology. And we do, Kevin, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how long was it before we discovered our stealth technology, that we had that ability to avoid radar, for example? And you wonder what's going on now at Area 51 and the development of the next generation of military aircraft, and how we keep moving that bar down the road, and how we can defeat enemy radars and enemy defensive capabilities. So, yes, our technology is expanding exponentially. But the other thing you have to remember is UFO sightings have gone back. I always trace it back to the Foo Fighters of the Second World War. But let's just start in 1947. What sort of technology would we have developed in 1947 that we would be keeping secret today that would explain the UFO sightings back in that era, and we just don't have any explanation for them that is a result of our technology?
This sighting as a teenager in Colorado, did it just shake you and your foundation?
No. It was what happened was a friend of mine's mother had seen the UFO. And this was a time where they were talking about the UFOs. Well, they're just blobs of light or indistinct objects in the distance, and they could be anything. And a friend of mine told me that his mother had seen one. And I wanted to talk to her about that. My one question was it a distinct object? And she said it was about 200 feet over the barn, and it had very sharp, distinct edges to it. It wasn't a blob of light or a fuzzy thing in the distance. It was a very clear, sharp object. And that's what I wanted to know. My mother had taken me to see Earth versus the Flying Saucers in the 1950s. So by the time I got to the point where I was investigating UFOs, there was no fright involved in it. It was just I wanted information.
Mom did the right thing. My dad used to take me to all those kind of movies, too. I'll never forget that.
My mother was a big science fiction fan, and people say, well, how did you get interested in this? And I said, my mom was interested in science fiction, which is alien invasions and alien visitation and interstellar flight, and it's not a large step from that into the UFO field, which is interstellar flight and alien visitation. So she kind of inspired my interest in it.
Take a moment, Kev. Tell folks about where they can get your book and your blog, please.
The book is UFOs in the Deep State, available at Amazon.com. I guess it's available on the Barnes & Noble website. It's a book that you can buy in the bookstores. The website is www.kevinrandall.blogspot.com. And for those that are interested in my Vietnam experience, I got one called www.vietnamgroundzero.blogspot.com. It's linked on the other one that tells my relatively true stories of my adventures in Vietnam and as a helicopter pilot.
Kevin, we'll talk to you next week with your weekly UFO reports, okay?
Absolutely. Good to have a long chat with you.
That's right. Kevin Randall, UFOs in the Deep State. Up next, let's go to my birthday and have open lines on Coast to Coast AM.